Welcome back to Change Starts Here. I'm your host, Dustin Odom, and today we're diving into a critical aspect of leadership, competence. Specifically, we'll be looking at the competence part of the speed of trust and how two key cores of credibility, those are capabilities and results, impact the trust we build as leaders. Whether you're leading a classroom, a school, or an entire district, trust is the foundation upon which everything else is built. And while having strong character is essential, competence is what ensures that you can deliver on the promises you make. Without competence, even the best intentions fall short. So today, I want to focus on how we as educational leaders can strengthen our capabilities and deliver the results that build trust in our schools and communities. So let's start with capabilities. The core of credibility is all about whether we have the knowledge, skills, and tools to lead effectively. As leaders in education, it's easy to feel like we need to be experts in everything from curriculum, instruction, management, community engagement. But the reality is, as you know, no one can do it all. And instead of trying to do it all, our job is to identify our strengths, develop them, and surround ourselves with people who complement our skill sets. Again, our goal is not to do it all. It's to know what our strengths are, develop those to be even stronger, and surround us with people who complement the areas that we're weak in. That brings us to the first of five trust behaviors that I want to highlight today. That's deliver results. At the end of the day, it's not enough to have good intentions or lofty goals. We need to deliver. Our teachers, students, and communities are counting on us to get things done. So how do we make sure we're delivering results? First, it's important to stay focused on what matters most. In education, we're often pulled in a thousand different directions, but trust is built when we follow through on the key priorities. Again, we're all pulled in a thousand different directions, but trust is built when we follow through on the key priorities, whether it's improving student outcomes, creating a safe and welcoming school environment, or building strong relationships with families. Delivering results requires us to be intentional, disciplined, and relentless in pursuing our goals. The second behavior I want to highlight is get better. Education is constantly evolving, and as leaders, we need to commit to continuous improvement. I know we all say that, and we all think we know it, but that means every day we need to be obsessed with how do we get better. My wife and kids make fun of me all the time for being obsessed with TikTok right now. And the part of TikTok that I like is there are motivational speakers and there are leaders who share their insights in a way that helps challenge my thinking every day. And so I want to challenge all of you to find that opportunity every day when you wake up, ask yourself, how are you going to get better today? So what that means is not just joining me in the TikTok world, which again may not be the best example for people, but it means being open to feedback, learning from our mistakes, and always looking for ways to grow. When we model a growth mindset, we not only improve ourselves, but we also set the tone for our teams and students to do the same. In today's world, being a lifelong learner isn't just a nice to have, it's a must. Whether it's staying up to date on new teaching practices, understanding emerging technologies, which is something that we all need to do, or adapting to changes in policy, which, as we know, there are a lot of policy changes that are happening these days, getting better ensures that we remain capable of leading effectively. Next, let's talk about confronting reality. This is probably my favorite behavior. This one, and its reason is because it's the toughest of the trust behaviors, but really, I think it's the most important. As leaders, we can't afford to shy away from the difficult truths, whether it's facing performance issues within our teams, acknowledging gaps in student achievement, or addressing systematic challenges within our schools. Confronting reality is about being honest with ourselves and others, even when it's uncomfortable. It's about taking the blinders off and tackling problems head on. When we confront reality, we create a culture of openness and transparency where trust can thrive. It sends a clear message that we're not afraid to deal with the tough stuff, and that builds credibility. Again, confronting reality in a loving, grace-filled way is what sends a clear message that we're not afraid to deal with the tough stuff, and it builds our credibility. That brings us to the next behavior, which is clarify expectations. I work with someone now who loves to say clarity is love, and I could not agree more. In any organization, but especially in schools, clear communication is key. Too often, misunderstandings or misaligned expectations lead to breakdowns in trust. As leaders, we need to be crystal clear about what we expect from our teams, and we also need to make sure we understand their expectations of us. It's a two-way street. We need them to understand our expectations, but we need to understand their expectations of us. This goes beyond just setting goals or giving directions. It's about ensuring that everyone is on the same page, whether it's talking about classroom instruction, school culture, or student success. When expectations are clear, people are more likely to meet them, and trust naturally follows. I'll say it one more time because I like to repeat, as you guys can tell. When expectations are clear, people are more likely to meet them, and trust naturally follows. Finally, let's talk about practice accountability. Accountability is often seen as a negative thing, and I hate that because in reality, it's a powerful way to build trust. Practicing accountability means holding ourselves and others responsible for the commitments we make. It's about creating a culture where we are empowered to do the best work, but we are also accountable for the results they produce. In schools, this might look like setting clear performance goals for teachers, holding regular check-ins to track progress, or providing support when someone is struggling to meet expectations. When we practice accountability, we show that we care about results, but we also care about the people behind those results. Back to repeating, when we practice accountability, we show that we care about results, which, yes, is incredibly important, but we also show that we care about the people behind those results. It's a balance that, when done right, fosters trust and drives success. So as you think about the five trust behaviors, deliver results, get better, confront reality, clarify expectations, and practice accountability, I want to challenge each of you to reflect on how you're incorporating these into your own leadership. Building trust through competence isn't just about being good at what you do. It's about continuously striving to improve, facing challenges head on, and holding yourself and your team accountable for the work that matters most. In just a minute, you'll get to listen to one of our superstar coaches, Desiree Cocroft, and she'll share some practical advice on how to apply these skills in your school and school district, because she's someone who's in schools and districts all across the country. And if you'd like to dig deeper into these particular behaviors, you can click the link in our show notes, and we've got a Speed of Trust resource there for you. As always, before I leave, I just want to thank you for joining me today. Thank you for putting your growth first. Thank you for recognizing that change does start here with you. Remember, trust isn't built overnight, but with intentional effort and focus on both character and competence, we can create the kind of trust that transforms schools and leads to lasting success. Until next time, keep leading with purpose and remember, change starts here. All right, Desiree. Thank you so much for making time to be here with us. I'm sure your schedule is as crazy as anybody else's in this organization. So thank you for being here.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to be here.
So we're going to dive in and get to the meat quickly because that's what these episodes are about. So you've worked with countless schools throughout Franklin Covey's Leader in Me work. Can you start by sharing how trust plays a role in creating a culture of leadership in schools?
Goodness, yes, it plays such a big role in leadership in schools because so many leaders focus on like the strategies and the checklists, you know, all the things that they're supposed to do as a leader. And a lot of times when I'll come in to do Speed of Trust trainings, it's an aha moment, like, oh, wait, there are some behaviors that I may have been doing that have led my staff to believe that some things were okay that really aren't okay. So you can do all the strategies and checklists in the world.
Yeah.
But when you recognize that behavior plays a big part, it is a big aha moment.
Yeah. So one of the behaviors that we've talked about, and I know that you work regularly with folks on, is get better, right? So how, from your lens, how can educational leaders foster a mindset of continuous improvement, not just for themselves, that's really important, but across their teams and their school communities?
Yeah, I think the biggest part of get better is to recognize that as a leader, it's okay if you're not always right. And I think sometimes as a leader, we feel like we have to be right all of the time. So actually creating a culture where it's okay to make mistakes, or at least when mistakes are made, there is a healthy way of debriefing what has happened so something else can be done differently later. And then psychologically, there is some psychological safety that people can have when they have a failure and have a mistake. And so really creating a space where you make it okay for you to make a mistake and being able to admit to that in front of your team in a way that makes them know that, hey, if they made a mistake and I can also have permission to make mistakes and get better from those mistakes instead of trying to hide them.
Yeah, I love that. I think one nuance to that that I'm sure you've experienced is, let's say you have a school leader or a superintendent or a district leader who still has a low trust community. They like to show vulnerability. However, there's already been evidence in their time as a leader that the community they're leading will take advantage of that vulnerability. Mm. How do you help people navigate those kind of rough waters when they come across them?
Yeah, when it comes to vulnerability, I take a piece of advice from Brené Brown, and she says that all vulnerability isn't vulnerability if there is not safety in vulnerability. And so just sharing for the sake of sharing, I would not advise that, especially like you said, you might have had, I mean, especially if you have a low trust group with you, you may not want to share everything that is at the core of you. But I do think that there is something to be said about, well, what level of sharing can you do at this point? Because I do think that there are levels of intimacy in terms of sharing with your staff that need to be established. And it's almost like unpeeling an onion. That's the right. Yeah. And building relationships, you can't just go all the way to the center of the onion. You definitely need to unpeel it, because as human beings, you know, we need time to really build relationships. And that's what we talk about, is speed of trust. You know, it takes time. It's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
So to that end, one of my favorite behaviors is confronting reality. Ooh. And we know confronting reality can be tough, especially in education, where the challenges are just complex, right? Mm-hmm. The people serving the community, the district challenges, all those things. What advice do you have for leaders who need to face hard truths, whether it's about school performance, staff dynamics, or student outcomes?
I love this. I think that this actually holds true with our content around speed and trust, but I also think about four disciplines of execution in terms of confront reality, when we can just really note that this is just where we are right now. This is like not the end. And if we can confront that, then it's more about growth than the actual outcome that's happening right now. And if we can focus on growth versus outcomes, confront reality can feel way less like a ton of bricks. It's just like, you know what? This is just where we are right now. Let's own it. What do we want to do moving forward?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, leaders, I guess my question in that would be, how can leaders more effectively clarify expectations with their teams to ensure alignment and to avoid those challenging misunderstandings that I'm sure you've witnessed?
Yeah. So I think the biggest part of clarifying expectations is that we think that what we're saying is understood by everyone just because we sent a memo and just because we said it out loud. I think if leaders actually gave space to, not at the end of a meeting saying like, do we have any questions? Because obviously people want to get out of the meeting, they're not going to have any questions, but more of what questions do we have? Or, hey, talk to the person next to you and, you know, go ahead and summarize what we've learned today. I want you to tell me, what are some blind spots that we have in what has been said? What are questions that other people might ask us about what has been said? Because we want to be as thorough as possible. The second part of that, I would say, though, would also be, sometimes we don't give people the opportunity to connect to the new thing that's happening. So we might be, we might be communicating it, but have we given them the opportunity to really connect with the change that's happening or the new thing that might be communicated because of whatever is changing at your school or your district. And so I think really giving people time to connect with it and connect with the why will help in this clarifying expectations, because sometimes you give them an expectation and the why is still very unclear and they're not connected to the why.
Yeah. It's funny you're saying that. I'm feeling very convicted right now. I'm coaching a fifth grade, this little man over here, coaching Luke's fifth grade basketball team. And last night I tried to implement something new. And I don't think I provided space for fifth graders to really deal with it. And so I know if I'm not doing that well for fifth graders, I can imagine how, and I was even trying in my practice plan to think I was doing it. And so as adults, I'm positive we skip over that and we just make that assumption of like, once I say it, we're going,
of course,
as opposed to recognizing we're all kids at heart. We're all humans. Yeah. We all have to process. And so you have to give people that space, right?
Yeah. And I think too, the other part is that the way our world is set up, sometimes you're giving people new expectations with like 5 seconds of time before something has to be acted upon. And I think just really giving ourselves permission to know that when those times happen, it is going to be some misunderstandings, but as much as possible, in terms of like building trust, sometimes you can give people, when there's a high level of trust with a group, you can give them very split second expectations. And because they have those nuances of what is needed, their social awareness is different because there has been an established trust relationship with their team. There's still very little misunderstandings that happen when a team fully trusts each other.
You know, we're creating transparency. Yeah. We're confronting reality. Mm-hmm. We're clarifying our expectations. And so that leads to one of the more critical, you just talked about the four disciplines of execution. So the most critical practice in many ways is practicing accountability.
Yeah.
So my question, and this may be a bigger question than what you're expecting, would be, how can leaders and education foster a culture of accountability while still supporting and encouraging their staff and students?
My biggest piece of advice would be to take baby steps, because sometimes we can look at accountability as someone checking my homework, someone being on my back, versus seeing it as, hey, this is just an opportunity for me to have a conversation about whatever I might be having as a barrier for the area that we're all holding each other accountable in. So even when I've done four disciplines at schools, when it comes to trust, if we have a very low trust or maybe moderate trust and we just haven't done accountability together, I would say, hey, let's take our time. Like, so let's scaffold it. Maybe our first meeting is just getting to know each other better. And what each other really needs and what our whys are. And so really taking that time to establish those accountability conversations so they deepen over time, instead of, you know, a lot of times organizations would be, hey, we've been working together for 30 years. Now let's pair up and do this. And all because we've been working together, don't mean we know each other. And in that way, most people don't want to talk about what they're not doing right or what is wrong. But if we make it okay, like, again, growth versus outcomes, I think that accountability conversation could be a lot easier. And if we really embed true time for people to get to know each other and giving them space to create that safety bubble of accountability at their own pace.
That's great. I think that's really wise. And that's something I would say for every school, school leader or district leader to take into account. My background, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but coming from 100% free and reduced lunch background, working with our schools who were on the cusp of being closed any given year, or a number of teachers being let go if we didn't hit certain performance measurements. Yeah. So there's always, I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that was the life we were living into. And so what's your recommendation for school leaders who are trying to balance and create accountability that has to have an urgent timeline, with balancing it with empathy, particularly when you're working with, you know, a teacher or a student who's struggling, but you know you have to, like, the baby steps are great, but you may not feel like you have the time, or you absolutely may not have the time to have the baby steps?
Yeah.
What kind of nuance recommendation can you give in that sense?
No, that's a really great question, because there is a lot of time constraints that come with some of the things that we're working on. I will say, and I know this is not the same as answering that question with a new strategy, but I will say that if we do take the time to do, air quotes, the baby steps, you know, things will go faster. But in light of timing, I will say, be strategic about how you pair people, honestly. I think that we know our staff and we know our employees and we know that there are people that are really great at building rapport. And how can we strategically put them with people that might be a little less approachable or less apt to, you know, do those conversations that we're talking about. But pairing people strategically, I think would be the best way. And you know who those people are. There are always those secret people that we know we have on our staff that will get everyone going and get everyone moving. And so I think finding those people to be kind of like your moles, so to speak, could be a great way to get things going if you've got to do it fast.
Well, to your point, again, we're coming back to fifth grade basketball right now, but I have one kid who's kind of struggling to find himself. And last night to start practice, I paired him up with one of the kids who's really a vocal leader.
Yeah.
And just started in warmups. Then it went to the next exercise. And by the end of the evening in scrimmage, Ricky, who is just this lovely kid, is like flexing on people, like all excited because, again, it had nothing to do with my coaching. It had everything to do with picking that right partner, right?
Yeah.
And that kid helped him come to life.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Two more questions and then I'll let you get back to your day. So as someone who coaches educational leaders, what are some common barriers you come across that prevent them from fully embracing these trust behaviors, and how can they overcome them?
Yeah. So I think the biggest barrier that educators that I coach come against when they're working on building trusting teams and working on competencies is definitely time. So it's interesting that you mentioned time in terms of, you know, how do we, you know, help them build accountability if they don't have time for baby steps. It's time because there is this misconception that if I spend time on this, then it won't yield results. So what is the ROI on spending time on this when, you know, we know based on research that, hey, if a leader does spend time really being someone that can have that gravitas to move a group because they're leaning into trust behaviors, they are going to move way faster in the results that they want to create for their school. And so that's the biggest thing. Hey, this is worth the time spending. I would say that if it's not the other thing, it is if they have a staff that is already very low trust, they see it as like such an uphill battle with the things that they have to accomplish as a school in the given year that they're in. And that's totally understood. So it's kind of like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do we just go head forth with, you know, some of our strategies so that we can just get to our goal? Or do I spend some time on getting staff to have a higher sense of trust? And I do think that there is a way to do both. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, habit one, right? What's in our circle of control? What's in our circle of control? And how can we think of things that will help us get to our desired result versus focusing on all the barriers?
I love that. So the first is challenging your paradigm, right? If I don't spend time on this, it's kind of like when you're a new teacher, they tell you spend as much time going over your classroom procedures and operations early on so that you can get time back later, right? I was getting made fun of in my first couple of practices as a coach, but I had some great teacher leaders who taught me how to teach early on, which was, we're going to learn what it looks like to enter the gym. We're going to learn what it looks like to warm up. We're going to learn what it looks like. And we're going to spend the first practice, I think I spent 45 minutes on that simple task.
Okay.
We're five practices in, and now kids are doing it within about 30 seconds of walking in the gym. And so it's buying that time and understanding that, like, I love what you said. Like, it's, you have to have the paradigm of this is so important to not spend time on. And if I do spend time now, I'll get that time back in spades later, right?
Yeah. And you know what? We've taken years to create the habits that we have right now, and we think that changing is going to take 5 seconds when it really just takes consistency in small bites to make the changes happen. Yeah.
That's great. All right. Finally, if you could give one piece of advice that for a K-12 leader that for a K-12 leader looking to kind of strengthen their competence and build trust, what would it be?
Ooh, the biggest thing that I would say is take 5 minutes a day. And when I say 5 minutes a day, there is a part of Speed of Trust where we talk about the four cores of credibility. And I would say take 5 minutes a day on that area of credibility that you want to get better in. And so maybe that area of credibility is around your integrity or your intent. And we have so many tools around things that you can ask yourself to get better at that. Or maybe it is results and capabilities. But I would say take 5 minutes a day. Consider what is the one thing that you could get better at in one of your four cores. And I would say focus on that for 90 days. Don't do anything else. Just focus on the one thing. And the one thing will take you way further than trying to do all the things.
That's great. Well, Desiree, thank you for making time. Yes. I'm going to let you get back to changing lives. I think you said you're in Milwaukee this week. I know that you could be at different corners of the U.S. And so thank you for the commitment and passion you share with our folks. And thank you for making time to be here with us today. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. See you.